What's happening in Hardscapers? This is episode 253 of the How to Hardscape podcast, where we talk about how we can start and grow your hardscaping business. And on today's episode, we have six things that I talk about that specifically come up during my onboarding of new users into the software, or of demos that I do, of just frequently asked questions that I get. Now, a lot of this has to do with pricing, so this is a pricing episode. And if this does interest you and you want more episodes like this that I kind of go over a few different points that commonly come up when I discuss with other hardscapers, especially when people message me as well, all of these common questions come up time and time again. So this episode kind of covers that, but we can go in more in depth into one of these or continue this series of commonly asked questions. If that interests you, at How to Hardscape on Instagram, if you want to shoot me a message, if this is something of interest to you. I do need feedback on this to see if this is something that we continue in the future on this podcast. And like I said, this comes from not only messages that I get from hardscapers time and time again, but also through those How to Hardscape headquarters software demos and onboarding. And if you're looking for a software to get into in 2024 and beyond, the How to Hardscape headquarters software will help you budget, estimate job costs, schedule, time track, and so much more. We have our app coming out very shortly here. I'm hoping in a few weeks' time we'll have that live. And when that happens, the price will increase for new users. For existing users, the price will remain the same for whatever price mark target that they signed up at. But for new users, they will sign up at a higher price point. It's just our feature tiered pricing that we have in our software. So if you're looking to get into something like this, it also has chat groups. Every time a project is created, all the employees that were assigned to that project will be entered into a chat group automatically so that you can keep track of things on that project, specifically in that chat group. There is a course area, so you can assign courses to your employees. You can create your own courses, think onboarding courses, but you also have access to our courses, 3-hour plus interlocking concrete pavement installation course, 3-hour plus segmental retaining wall installation course, plus tests that go along with those and certificates, a couple other installation courses, and a few knowing your numbers courses there, all available in the software. And with all that said, at How to Hardscape, send me a message, let me know you want a demo, or go to members.howtohardscape.com for now to learn more about that. And if you're looking for bookkeeping, accounting, CFO services, reach out to Cycle CPA. That's CycleCPA.com. Let them know How to Hardscape sent you for money off their services there. And without further ado, let's get into today's episode. As we onboard more and more people into the How to Hardscape headquarters software, and even before this, back when we started with the spreadsheet, the budget and estimate spreadsheet, and we're selling that, and we had hundreds of contractors, and even outside of hardscaping, just because of where it was ranking on Google and people clicking in on it, looking for a budget and estimate spreadsheet. And being able to talk with these individual business owners, but especially through the software and having that one-on-one time, the spreadsheet was more so plug and play. And we had some great videos to help people along with that. But with the software, I always want to have a one-on-one conversation, at least with a demo and at least with an initial onboarding call. But we always do have videos available to help with onboarding as well, obviously. I've picked apart some things that consistently come up. And these are great questions, by the way, and I'm not singling out anybody using the software because these are common questions, common occurrences that I see time and time again. And even outside of the software, with somebody messaging me on Instagram or through YouTube, because we got a lot of YouTube resources on the same type of subjects here. These have to do with mostly pricing, but also kind of business in general and finances and all that. And these are six common things that I've seen, and I'm probably going to continue this series because there's other things that come up less commonly, but are still important to touch on in future episodes, and to just kind of keep this series going. And I don't know what I'm going to call it yet, but we'll see what comes out when I actually edit this. So these are topics, questions, things that come up during my onboarding calls or during just conversations in general based on the content that we're actually putting out there. So the first one here, owners pay. This is something that we've already touched on in the past, and I've already talked about how to go about calculating what you should be paying yourself as an owner, at least how I go about doing it. And I don't care whether or not you're actually paying yourself this amount, but this is the amount that should be in your budget and should be priced from. Because if anything was to happen to you, at least you have the money there to be able to outsource whatever you would need, or to be able to hire somebody really quickly. And the way I do it is I just add up the hours in a week that I do certain tasks. For example, I'm full-time in the field. I'm a part-time bookkeeper. I'm a part-time estimator, part-time designer, part-time this, part-time that. And I just look at however many hours in a week or in a month that is, and how much it would cost me to outsource those things. For example, outsourcing bookkeeping, outsourcing getting a part-time designer, paying per design or whatever that looks like, estimator, and full-time in the field. And that's what I should charge for my salary. That's what I should put in the budget. However your accountant has you pay yourself and withdraws and so on and so forth, that's probably the better suggestion as to how you actually pay yourself. But when it comes to actually creating a budget and making sure you're accounting for what you pay yourself in your business, that's the best way to go about it. And that's actually probably the most common thing that I get. But beyond that, I also get that people say that they want to reinvest their salary back into the business. So they'll only pay themselves, let's say, $40,000. I want to focus in on, are you paying yourself that, but charging for as if you were $100,000? And in that sense, you are freeing up that $60,000 to invest back into the business? Or are you just charging as if you're $40,000, paying yourself $40,000, and just in doing so saying, well, I'm just going to pay myself $40,000 and I'm going to invest back into the business with the remainder? Which is really nothing if you're paying yourself or pricing yourself as if you are a $40,000 employee. And that's why I like budgeting, and that's why I like pricing from a budget, is for that reason specifically. Making sure that I'm pricing myself appropriately to what the market would require to be able to pay for my services and for my expertise and for what I do in my business. And it doesn't matter, once again, at the end of the day, what you actually pay yourself. Do whatever you want with that, but price yourself appropriately for what you should be paying yourself. And that's where, when it comes to creating a budget and adding yourself into the budget as a salary employee, because you and your business are completely different entities, and your business should be paying yourself a salary. In that sense, then you're setting yourself up for success. You're pricing appropriately from that perspective. And you're also creating some sort of insurance that if something was to happen to you, you had to step away from the business for a couple of weeks, you could at least rest assured that you can get somebody, if you need to, really quickly to step in a few roles in your business, because that money is there. That money's already accounted for in the estimates that you've already sent out for those projects. And this brings me to number two, and that is profit. And I get this, once again, time and time again, that people don't really want to charge profit. I think those people are just some of the nicest people, because you are then acting as if you are a nonprofit without the tax benefits from it. If you don't want to charge profit, you will make more money working for somebody else, 100%. The profit is the return on investment of not only the capital that you have invested into the business, but also the sweat equity, your hard work that you've invested into the business, and also the risk that you take on as a business owner in the business. And you should be making a healthy margin to, especially in our industry, to account for these things. And especially if you combine that first one, not paying yourself and reasonable salary and saying that you're just investing it back into the business when in reality you're not. In addition to not wanting to charge a profit because you want to be nice to the client. You're already charging them for your materials. You're already charging them for your labor. And that should be good enough for you. It's really not. You're in business to make a profit. You're in business because your clients won't care if something was to happen and you needed to buy a new truck. And all of a sudden, not only were you not accounting for that new purchase immediately, and you have no money in your business bank account because you weren't charging for profit, and now you have to reinvest back into your business the money that the business has been paying you. Those clients that you did excellent work for won't care about that. And yet you gave them a really good deal because you weren't willing to charge profit on your labor, on your materials, on your overhead expenses, and to be able to make a return on investment of everything that we just talked about here. So make sure you're charging a profit. Make sure you're getting some sort of return on investment for everything that you do to be a business owner. It'll be much easier for you to just go and be a number two and work for somebody else and make probably more than what you're making right now if you're just starting out in business, and not have the risk, not have the worries, not have the concerns, work a lot less, and not have to worry anymore about whether or not you're pricing profit for a client or not. It'd be much better for you if you were to do that if you're not going to and you're not willing to charge a profit. And this brings me to market pricing. And this is not necessarily something that people ask me about, but this is something that I think I should touch on. I've touched on it in past episodes, but it also comes down to what we're doing with a budget and creating an estimate from a budget is creating a cost-based pricing. And at the end of the day, you can add as much as you want to your budget or as little as you want, and you could be over or under the actual market, what the actual market is willing to bear in terms of that pricing. So just to give an example, I always like to charge as if I'm the business that I want to be tomorrow. And what I mean by that is I will add into my expenses future down payments or saving up for certain equipment so that when I go to buy that equipment, that money is already there and it's in an operations account and I'm ready to, and I know how much money has accumulated in that so that when I need that piece of equipment, I'm ready to put a down payment on it or I'm ready to purchase it, whatever that looks like. And you can do that with a lot of different things. And especially in your budget, some things are known and some things are unknown. For example, you should know how much you pay for rent, and that should be very consistent for that year. But you may not know how much you're going to be spending on marketing, and you may need to adjust as you see fit during that season. And with all this said, this is more so a forecast. And with that, you could get carried away with that forecast. You could say, I want to start saving for a piece of equipment that I want to buy next year. And I want the full down payment of that. And I'm also going to get three of them. And I'm going to add that into my budget. Well, if you start to get carried away with that, all of a sudden your pricing is inflated and your pricing becomes unreasonable for what that market was willing to bear. So what I like to do is I like to start with a reasonable budget. And I like to price some jobs from that reasonable budget. And then the market will simply tell you whether or not you are underpriced or overpriced simply by the close ratio. So if your close ratio is high, you know that you can probably afford to raise your price a little bit. So what can you add to your budget to be able to be that company that you want to be tomorrow? And account for that specifically in your budget so you know exactly what it is and why you raised your price and what it is that you're saving for. What are the goals in your business? What do you want to get to and where do you want to get to in your business? So that's key and crucial with this budgeting process and with measuring and seeing where your close ratio is at. If your close ratio is too low, you might be looking at, hey, I may need to cut some things from my budget. Maybe I was just totally unreasonable with where my budget was at. So I need to cut some things, maybe even need to get more lean if I haven't added anything unreasonable to my budget. If that's just where my business is today and the market's telling me no, 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 I probably need to cut something in my business to be able to get down to a price that my market is willing to say yes more to. Now, in addition to that, the close ratio is just one type of quantitative piece of metric that you can use, but there's also a qualitative. There's also, hey, ask those clients that said no, why did you say no? And get a good reasoning why. If it was price-based, there it is. Update your budget. Figure out what you can do to update your budget. And this is if your close ratio is low. If your close ratio is high, you can still ask that question, but you can typically be able to raise your price. And we'll touch on that right after this. So close ratio is low, figure out why. If it keeps coming back that you have a high price, you may need to look at lowering your price, or it could be a service that you just started to offer and your business is just not set up for that type of service. And that could be that maybe you need to create another budget for a different division and assign some employees to that specific division so that you can get to a properly priced for that specific market. For example, if you have a design build division and you want to start pricing out lift and relay work. Well, if you just incorporate both of those services under one division, your lift and relay work is probably going to be priced higher than the market. And that's just based on you don't need much equipment for lift and relay work. So that's overhead expenses that are going to inflate your pricing. But if you create a separate division for that specific lift and relay work, and you assign maybe one or two employees to that specific division, all of a sudden you've got a blank canvas of overhead expenses of equipment and tools and anything that you can share between the two different divisions to be allocated to that specific division. So now if you price from that budget, that lift and relay division budget, you are going to likely meet that market-based pricing, and you're probably going to get more yeses in terms of that close ratio, especially if it comes down to price being the reason why clients are saying no. However, if it's not price-based, you're going to get your clients or what would have been clients be saying certain things about how the sales meeting went, how the design proposal went, how your employee met them, or you yourself as the business owner, if you're the salesperson. This will kind of help you understand a little bit more. Maybe it took you too long to get the estimate to them, and they already went with somebody else, and it's taking you time and time again too long to get that estimate to them. And they've already gone with somebody else by the time you got that estimate to them. So it could be something that you need to shorten that time period from that client first reaching out to you, scheduling the consultation, getting that proposal to them, and then getting them signed up. Maybe that's just too long of a process. So you'll get a lot more quantitative metrics from your clients if you just ask them. And in my experience, I always get good information from my clients and am able to figure out why they went with somebody. But more often than not, it has to do with my pricing. Having said that, there's things that you can do that if you are priced higher than your market to be able to charge that price. And you do get yeses, even though you know you're priced higher than your market. And that's perceived value. And this could be anything from improving your sales cycle and showing up with samples and sample booklets and making that process for your clients, your expertise, much easier to choose product and to have that white glove service to make sure that you hold their hands all the way through and you show them that you're an expert and so on and so forth there. And it could be even in this online world, and we're going to be more and more in this online world of having some sort of, and I know this is something that most people won't think will add some sort of perceived value, but that's putting out good quality content online. And especially those clients that find you through that good quality content, especially if it's educational, it's informative. You're showing them that you know what you're doing. You're explaining your expertise and displaying that to them through that content. I know this because through YouTube, we get our leads coming in, and for the most part, those leads are not looking for anybody else. They have this perceived value that I am an authority in the space based on the information and the education that I put out there. And ultimately it's a vanity metric, but seeing that I do have subscribers and seeing that I do have comments and back and forth and so on and so forth, all of those things play into it. Ask anybody that gets a lot of leads from Instagram and they have a decent sized following, what their leads look like and how they're able to grow their business just based on that following and not having to spend even any more money on marketing, because it's those warm leads that are going to be more attuned to you. So put it this way, a word of mouth lead is amazing because they already have somebody that they know, like, and trust. Refer them to you, so you've already got the foot in the door with that client. Those are great leads. And what's an even better lead is somebody who has been following you online. They've seen your face, they've seen your work, and they look at you as if you're an authority in the space because of what you put out online. It's almost as if they already know you. It's already as if they know, like, and trust you. And that's the warmest lead that you can get. And there is perceived value in that process that you can actually charge higher than what that market is willing to accept for the most part. And that's not price gouging. That's setting yourself apart from the market. Because at the end of the day, if you are price gouging, if you are pricing yourself way higher than the market, they can always go out and get a different quote and decide if they want to go with somebody else. So always think what you can do to set yourself apart, to create that perceived value through the sales process, through the design process, through the actual build process as well. Even though that they've already signed up as a client, it's going to help you on the back end to get more word of mouth leads from that specific client and to end with a good 5-star review from that client as well. So how can you improve that perceived value? And what can you do to also build a marketing system on the back end, whether it is just leaving that client that you did work for with a good final result, you did quality work and your communication was great, and now they're going to pass you off with word of mouth referrals. Or if you are more attuned to Instagram, to YouTube, putting out content like that to get more referrals into your business and to build your business that way, whatever is the best suited to you, your personality, and what you think you can do best in your business. We want to take a break from today's episode to thank our sponsor, Cycle CPA. Are you basing your business decisions solely on a gut feeling? If so, you may be leaving potential profits on the table. It's crucial to base these important decisions on your financials, whether you're planning to hire a new employee, add another crew, purchase equipment or vehicles, or take on more debt to support a new service line. At Cycle CPA, they not only handle bookkeeping and taxes, but they also provide guidance and advisory services tailored to the landscape and hardscape industry. Their team of specialized accountants ensures that when it comes to making the next key decision in your company, you'll have a financial partner in your corner. So visit them at cyclecpa.com, and for $200 off, mention the How to Hardscape podcast. Now back to our episode. And kind of everything that I just talked about there leans into listening to other people's numbers, listening to other people's profit margins, listening to other people's markups, and so on and so forth there. I don't personally like listening to anything else, because at the end of the day, you don't even know what they are referring to. For example, if they say that they were 40% profitable this year, well, that already raises some red flags to me that, okay, they're probably talking about gross profit, even though that they think they're talking about net profit. Gross profit being revenue minus direct costs to that project, materials and direct labor. And then net profit being after everything, whatever is left for that business, and during a specific time period as well, whether that's year to year or month to month, whatever that might be. So if you hear a super high profit margin and they just say it's a profit margin, they are probably talking about gross profit. And if you ask them and they say, no, that's net profit, well, they're probably not taking their owner's salary out of that. and they're probably not taking overhead expenses, maybe even out of that. And they are not giving you great information in that sense. Because if you try to add a 40% net profit margin to a project, you may likely price yourself way out of the market, depending on how you've created your budget. Same thing with markup percentages on materials. If it totally depends on how the person is pricing a project to be able to listen to that, because that markup percentage on materials could be them trying to recover their overhead through that markup, and they're not actually charging for their overhead through direct labor or whatever, because there's many different pricing methodologies that you can't really narrow down which one somebody is using. And if you just hear, oh, I mark up my materials by 50%. Well, okay, are they doing that to be able to recover their overhead, or why are they marking up the materials 50%? Instead, what you should do is create a system for your business that makes sense. Charge based on what your business is and where you want your business to be, based on your goals. Add a profit margin on top of that and watch that close ratio. And referring back to our last point with the close ratio, rinse and repeat with that. See why clients are saying yes, why they're saying no, what you can improve on, and create perceived value. That's not to say don't listen to what other people's markups and profit, just take a fine tooth comb to what they're saying. Take it with a grain of salt and really create a plan for your business and figure out what works best for your business. And that brings me to pricing methodologies, as we touched on there. And I actually have an episode specifically on this, actually multiple episodes. We've talked with Jim Houston on this subject. I've talked to many consultants that have come on the show. We touch on it briefly. I've done an episode on it, or two even. And we also had Weston from Synced Up also talk about this. My dislike of multiple overhead recovery system. There's also single overhead recovery system. There's also a factoring, just square footage multiplication, or materials times two, or whatever you want to say. My preference is always labor rate. And what that is I'm just going to recover my overhead on my labor rate. And I'm going to base that on how much time I have in a year and how much that project is going to take me, the project that I'm quoting. So if I have, let's just say, 1,000 hours in a year, and the project's going to take me 100 hours, that's 10% of my season that project is going to take. So I need to take 10% of my overhead and assign that dollar amount to that project to recover my overhead, and that goes directly into my labor. It's easy, you know exactly that you're going to be recovering that overhead and that budgeted overhead, as opposed to marking up your labor by this percentage and trying to make a forecast for materials, which is extremely difficult to do, and marking up your materials by this percent, even though a wall product that is $20 a square foot and another wall product that is $40 a face foot, is going to be installed at the same rate, the same time it's going to take you, yet you're going to make less money on that markup to recover your overhead on that $20 a face foot as opposed to that $40 a face foot, even though it's going to take you the same amount of time. That has just never made sense for me. The way I look at it is, multiple overhead recovery system is like an accountant trying to bring a system into the hardscape industry without any knowledge of the hardscape industry. So just like I said there, let's take it to pavers. Paver could be $5 a square foot for those medium-sized pavers, or they could be $2 a square foot for those small-sized pavers. Well, based on a material markup percentage to recover my overhead, that $5 a square foot paver is actually going to make me more money in my markup to cover my overhead. But those medium-sized pavers, I'm actually going to install much faster. So why am I installing something much faster and actually making more money than those smaller pavers, which are going to take me more time? So if I install those smaller pavers, I'm actually going to recover less overhead, and it's going to take me more time. It just doesn't make sense. So that's why multiple overhead recovery, I do not like it. We sell time. At the end of the day, we sell time. We sell our time. We sell our expertise. Our expertise are tied to time. And you can say, well, you sell materials on a project, don't we? Well, anybody can go out and buy these materials, but not everybody can install them. That's where expertise and our time comes into play. any person out there, any retail person can walk into the store, buy pavers, have them delivered, but they may not be able to install them. So at the end of the day, we are selling our time, we're selling our labor, and that's why I like the labor rate recovery system for overhead to recover our overhead, because at the end of the day, we're selling time. Now you can lean in the opposite direction. So a multiple overhead recovery system is an accountant's brain coming into the hardscape industry. You could be a hardscaper, nothing wrong with this. Like I'm a hardscaper. I see myself as that. You could be a hardscaper's brain coming into pricing a hardscape project. And what that would look like is square foot pricing, right? Because we know square feet, we know how to multiply. So we would say a 500 square foot patio. Well, I'm going to charge $20 a square foot for this, which I think is underpriced personally. And that would be my cost. That would be what I charge that client. And that would be a hardscaper's brain coming to an estimating a hardscape project. Now we did have Greg Crabtree on the show. And he actually, I respect everything that Greg puts out there. I love his book, Simple Numbers 2.0. And I asked him at the end of the last episode, and when I have him back on, we're going to discuss this more about pricing methodologies and multiple overhead recovery system, labor rate, et cetera, et cetera. And he doesn't like them. And he said, I just look for a 2-to-1 ratio between labor dollars to overhead and everything left over other than materials. So he doesn't even look at materials. He just says like materials are what they are for that project. It's something that doesn't change. If the client wants this paver installed, that doesn't change. That is what it is. But labor can change. Labor can fluctuate. Labor can be done quicker or slower, especially depending on the equipment that's there. So that's why he just deducts materials immediately, and he considers labor to be something that you measure, as well as your overhead and your net profit, whatever those admin costs and et cetera, whatever that is. So he's looking for a 2-to-1 ratio. He wants for every dollar spent on labor, $2 in overhead and net profit at the end of the day. So in his sense, you could just take labor, whatever your hours are for that project, and multiply it by 2. That's going to give you your overhead plus net profit, and then add in your materials on top of that, and that's your pricing. Now that's a little bit more complex version of factoring, of just taking materials plus labor times 2, or whatever you might do in that scenario. I do like it was, once again, coming back to those materials example, materials are installed at different paces and may cost more, may cost less, may cost the same. I also don't even look at materials in the same aspect as Greg looks at material, does not look at materials actually. So I've actually pulled up a quote that I made not too long ago for this season. It's a small overlay porch project, and we have and I'm just doing the math right now, 940. We have a 1 to 2.34 ratio on our labor to overhead expenses and net profit with that. And Greg even said, like, sometimes you're going to go above that. Sometimes you're going to go below that. It depends on the season. It depends on the type of work that you're doing and so on and so forth. But the goal is that 1-to-2 ratio. And I don't like that for creating a price for a project. I like that for checking with your project. How are you looking with that? Because at the end of the day, it also depends on the type of work that you're doing. In my business, and coming back to how I operate my business and we rent equipment, I'm going to have a higher material cost because of that. We run bins, so we're for our excavation and disposing of that material. So our actual material cost, our cost of sale, is actually going to be more expensive than a business that is actually doing dump runs, and they have an employee sitting in a truck with a dump trailer and doing those dump runs. And their labor cost is actually going to be more than my business. So this 2-to-1 ratio doesn't apply to every business, doesn't apply to every business model. I just see it as a good check to be able to see where you're at. And especially at the end of that project, once again, a good check to see where you're at. Because once again, Greg's coming at this from an accountant's brain. He's doing this as he sees the data on the back end and knows kind of what is a good margin to be at to be able to continue to grow as a service-based business. He also looks at many other types of business as well, different business models, not just service-based business. And that's always important to note, and especially when you're getting advice, especially when you're getting advice from somebody who may know service-based businesses, but may not know the intricacies of a specific hardscape business and different business models that go along with that. Now, it's always good to check your gross profit margin on projects, and that helps you compare your labor, your direct labor, as well as your materials, and compare that to what your overhead expenses and profit would be on top of that. And that's where that 2-to-1 ratio comes from. So, but at the end of the day, I don't like any of these ratios for pricing a project. And that would be the same as some sort of factoring or square footage pricing, or being able to take your labor and materials and multiply it by 2 to say that that's a 50% gross profit margin. Because is it really in your business, and does that help you meet the goals that you've set out in your business? And that's why I like budgeting so much, is that it is the actual costs of your business with that equipment, with those overhead expenses that will change, and especially with that equipment will change over time. And especially you, your owner's salary, that's going to differ largely, whether you're in the field or in the office, and what kind of ratio you have between the two as to what your salary is, and especially between those two as well. Whether it's direct labor, your salary is associated to that direct labor, or your salary is associated to a more admin side of things, the sales, the design, and bookkeeping, etc. So every business is going to have a very different equipment to labor ratio, and that's going to directly affect what your gross profit margin should be with any given project. So a blanket statement of materials plus labor multiplied by 2 will give you a 50% gross profit margin. Well, does your business need a 50% gross profit margin? Have you figured that out? Have you looked on the back end and actually created a budget to know that a 50% gross profit margin is going to cover what you have on the back end with your business and the expenses that come along with your business, and especially the goals that you've set in your business to once again price yourself like the company that you want to be tomorrow rather than the company that you are today? Another example with this would be mortgaging a property versus renting. That's going to affect your overhead expenses. More than likely, the mortgage of a property is going to cost you more than the rent of a property. So at one stage in your business, you could be renting, and another stage later, you could be mortgaging. And that's going to directly affect that overhead expense in your gross profit margin for what you should be at for every project. So a blanket statement, it just doesn't work. It's better to set out a budget, and whether you call it a budget or a forecast, and to price from that, because that's where your business is going and what your business should be charging for. And then once again, renting equipment versus not renting equipment. On the renting side, that's actually a cost of sale item added basically to materials versus actually owning that piece of equipment, which falls on the other side of that gross profit margin, which is your part of your gross profit, whatever's left over there to pay off your overhead expenses equipment and the net profit at the end of it. So there's so many different variables. So if somebody tells you price out a 50% gross profit margin, it may work for their business, it may not work for your business. This is why just running the numbers, creating a budget, pricing from that budget will help you understand what your gross profit margin should be for your business and for the direction that you're taking your business. And that's once again why I don't like listening to other people's numbers. It just depends more so on what my business is. Okay, I am coming to the end here. One last one. And I just want to ask if anybody has found this helpful. I would really appreciate, just shoot me a message on Instagram at How to Hardscape. Let me know that it was helpful, that you would want more of these types of episodes. If there's one of these topics that you would want me to do a deeper dive on to talk more in depth about something, please, I would very much like some feedback on these types of episodes and what you would want to hear more from this. If you haven't given us a 5-star rating review, Apple, Spotify, Apple, you can leave a written review as well. I would also appreciate that as well. And for this last one, production rates, when do you stop adjusting them? So as you grow your business, you're likely going to become more and more efficient. and you're going to add more equipment to become more efficient, or tools, or whatever that might look like. But at what point in time do you stop updating your production rates to reflect that efficiency? Well, efficiency is actually a competitive advantage. If you are in and out faster than another company would be, that is a competitive advantage that you can actually communicate to your client about your efficiency and how long it's going to take you to complete a project, especially in that sales process. Now, I do suggest continuously updating your production rates as long as there's a major change in your business. For example, you got a new piece of equipment that you know is going to make you just a lot more productive in general for those production rates. That would be a good time to revisit those, especially at the end of a project and you're doing your job costing and you see you're out or you're too high or you're too low. Continuously looking at those production rates and going in and updating them until you get to a good, healthy area where you are pricing appropriately for those production rates, I think is a smart thing to do. You're not going to lose money updating your production rates, because as you add a piece of equipment, you're actually bringing in ROI based on the profit margin that you're applying to your project, because we're pricing in our equipment to the project. And then if we add our profit margin on top of what we priced, that's also adding that profit margin to that equipment that you're charging out for. You just want to make sure that you're charging out appropriately for that piece of equipment, as well as your labor and so on and so forth. So as long as your production rates are accurately reflecting your production in the field, it's never a bad thing to take a look at them and seeing where you're at with them every now and then, but especially after there's been a major change, a major acquisition, a new employee that's highly experienced added to the your crew, or so on and so forth. There, increasing efficiency is just another way to become more competitive also in your pricing, and at the same time to add that perceived value if you're able to clearly communicate to your prospective clients that you how efficient you are compared to other companies based on the equipment that you have in your fleet as well. And with that being said, those are six things that commonly come up, at least in my experience, through these onboarding calls that I've had with some amazing contractors that have signed up through the How to Hardscape headquarters software, as well as conversations with people just messaging me online and asking my opinion on certain things, and as well as my experience through helping other contractors with the budget and estimate spreadsheets. And I hope that you found this helpful, and I hope that maybe it's cleared something up for you or it's helped you in some way. But also, I'd love feedback on this. This would really help me out to decide whether or not these episodes are worth pursuing in the future and continuing this series, or if there's a specific topic here that I discussed or touched on or brushed on that you want me to go deeper into as well in an episode of itself. So thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Once again, rating and review Apple, Spotify, wherever you can. Written a review on Apple as well would be amazing, and I'll read them out here on this podcast. And you've listened to me talk about the How to Hardscape headquarters throughout this project, and that's our software that'll help you budget, estimate job costs, time tracking, scheduling. We've got courses, installation courses that you can assign to your employees for onboarding purposes. You can create your own courses for onboarding purposes, and so on and so forth with the software. If you're looking to sign up for that, shoot me a message at How to Hardscape on Instagram. And while you're on Instagram, if you are at @cycle_CPA. If you're looking for bookkeeping, accounting, CFO services, reach out to them there, get that conversation started, and sign up and let them know that How to Hardscape sent you for money off their services there. And we look forward to meeting with you next week on the How to Hardscape podcast.